The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
This is Jackson Brown, and you're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, this is John from Five for Fighting. And you got my buddy, my longtime friend, the lovely Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Donald Fagan.
And this is Walter Becker, you know, Steely Dan.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, this is Jake Slichter.
John Munson.
Dan Wilson. We are Semisonic.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge, and you're listening to my friend, Nicole Sandler.
How you doing out there? This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, everybody, this is Pat Monahan from the band Train, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler, my favorite on-air personality.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Music to my ears.
All right. Boom. Why do I barely hear me? Hi. Welcome. Welcome to a, what day is today? Tuesday. It's only Tuesday. Okay, now I can hear myself. All right, turning up the headphones a little bit. Yeah, it's election day. You know, that's what happens on Tuesdays here. Joe Biden and Jill went to Buffalo today, sounded all the right notes. The right wingers are deflecting and making excuses. I honestly don't know what the answer is about all these shootings. I don't know. Except that we need to do something and we haven't done anything. So that's where I am on that one. Joe Biden was actually good. He was good, I thought.
What happened here is simple and straightforward. Terrorism. Terrorism. Domestic terrorism. Violence inflicted in the service of hate and the vicious thirst for power that defines one group of people being inherently inferior to any other group. A hate that through the media and politics, the internet, has radicalized angry, alienated, lost, and isolated individuals into falsely believing that they will be replaced, that's the word, replaced by the other.
Replaced.
By people who don't look like them and who are therefore in a perverse ideology that they possess and being fed lesser beings.
Okay. So that was Joe Biden. He had one other statement that I thought was pretty good.
Look, we've seen the mass shootings in Charleston, South Carolina, El Paso, Texas, in Pittsburgh, last year in Atlanta, this week in Dallas, Texas, and now
in
Buffalo.
Houston, but okay.
In Buffalo, New York. White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through our... It really is.
It is.
Running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and forcefully as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. None.
It's not just ideology, the ideology of white supremacy. It's the partisanship. You know, I never thought that I would see the day when racism is a partisan issue, but it is. As I said yesterday, and I was half joking, but the more I think about it, the more it's not funny, so it's not a joke. And I think it's true. Not all... How did it go? Not all Republicans are racist, but most racists seem to be Republicans, at least here in this country. Just saying, kind of falls that way. You know, I pulled some stuff from the chief idiot on the airwaves, Tucker Carlson, and basically how he was deflecting. You know, the man, they all lie. And you know what? I'm not going to go there just because... I was feeling pretty good. And I start thinking about this and the way they refuse to accept any blame, any responsibility for the ugliness in our society today. It's deflection. They should. So anyway, let's move on because we are going to talk election. Today is primary day in five states, and a couple of them are pretty consequential. So Idaho, Kentucky, Now, in Kentucky, Rand Paul, that walking piece of human excrement, that's one way to put it, right? Rand Paul is up this year. If anybody deserves to be voted out, it's him. And Democrats have the chance to nominate the guy to go up against Rand Paul that they blew it on in the last election. You may recall in the last election, what was her name? Amy something. Amy Mick something. It'll come to me when I'm not thinking of it. The former soldier who put out a great introduction ad, which Amy McGrath, was that it? Amy, all right, someone in the chat room will tell me. I don't remember, but it'll come to me. Anyway, she was not a great candidate. She put out one good ad that she rode to win the primaries. But Charles Booker, who is terrific, entered the race a little late last time out and lost to her. And again, she lost to Mitch McConnell. Well, really? If you can't beat Mitch, Amy McGrath. Thank you, Lauren. Yes, Amy McGrath. And she was just bad. And Charles Booker was just, you know, gaining traction. Just the timing was off. If that election was a week later, he might have been the nominee. And maybe things would be different today. But we do have a chance to knock out Rand Paul, which is totally worth taking, you know. And Charles Booker is again running. Amy McGrath is not. So, yeah, if you're in Kentucky, that's one. These are primary races. This is where we choose the candidates who are going to be on the ballot for the general election. Too many people sit out primaries. Let me tell you something. The primary is where we win or lose these elections. If we don't get the right candidate through in the primary, then we're screwed in the general. So that's what's so important in Kentucky. The other states voting today, Pennsylvania, hold that thought. We'll get back to Pennsylvania in a moment. North Carolina and Oregon. So, I mean, really, aside from Idaho, which I don't know that there are any Democrats in Idaho. Now I'm expecting a mean, nasty, angry email from someone who's like, oh, we're here. Well, then work harder. All right. So today, you know, there's races of consequence in all of those states. Idaho, probably the least among them. But anyway, Pennsylvania, if I had to put them in ranked order, would probably be at the top of the heap. There's so much going on there, from the craziness on the Republican side with Dr. Oz and all that nonsense. And, well, you know, just a lot of drama. So, friend of the show, Will Bunch, will be along at the bottom of the hour. He's in high demand today, as you would expect. He is a national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And I talk to him all the time about things of national or international import. But today we're going to talk Pennsylvania. So they're going to replace the outgoing Pat Toomey. It's about time. And on the Democratics, so on the Republican side, it's a race between Dr. Oz, just what we need, another TV quack, and some financier, some MAGA money guy, who the rest of the party is behind, while the former guy is all in for Dr. Oz. I'm not even going to call him a doctor. I don't trust that he is a medical doctor. Mehmet Oz, I believe, is his actual name. On the left, the Democratic Party, in the primary, it's really down between two people. One is the Lieutenant Governor, John Fetterman, and the other is the sort of milquetoast conservadem Connor Lamb, who lost the last time he tried for a Senate run, I believe. Anyway, John Fetterman has been out in the lead, and then yesterday we find out he suffered a mini stroke. He's in the hospital. He will not be at the election watch party tonight because he's still in the hospital. In fact, they just released a statement not too long ago that he's doing, that's not it. Hold on. Oh, that's interesting. Sorry, I just saw an interesting tidbit crossed my Twitter stream. I'll fill you in on it in a little bit. Now I can't find what I did with it. All right. So, but basically, he's getting a procedure done today because they think the stroke was caused by AFib, and it's not a stent, but something like that. But they expect a full recovery. He's doing fine. But a stroke days before Election Day, is kind of disconcerting. So everything is sort of up in the air. And there's other stuff going on, too. We'll talk to Will Bunch about it. But, you know, we here in the United States aren't the only ones voting right about now, except our election process is fucked. It's just so totally wrong. So by way of contrast, let me share with you what's happening in Australia. Australia has an election day. Yep, they are voting on, it's a prime minister for them, right? They have a prime minister who runs things, not a president, if I got it right. And so their election for a new prime minister is this Saturday. It is May 21st. So there's number one right there. Election day is a Saturday. It's a day when most people don't work. So they don't have to take time off from work to go vote. They already have the day off. It makes sense. But the other thing is, I'm looking at the timeline for their election. And yes, Election Day is this Saturday, polling day, commencement of terms for territory senators. Okay, so that's May 21st. This election cycle began April 11th, not 6 months ago, not a year ago, not 4 years ago, April 11th, a month and a week. So what, 5 weeks ago? That's how you do it. So on April 11th at 9:29 a.m., they had the prorogation of the 46th Parliament. And a minute later, the dissolution of the House of Representatives. And then the issue of writs. I guess that's when I'm guessing here. Obviously, I didn't take civics in Australia. But it seems that on April 11th, they dissolved the previous parliament, the House of Representatives, and then they get ready to vote in a new government. On April 18th, it was the close of the electoral rolls. So I guess they had a week from the day they decide they're going to call an election, a week to decide if they want to run and get their names out there. April 18th, close of electoral rolls. April 21st, 1 month out from Election Day, declaration of nominations. Or I'm sorry, close of candidate nominations, and the next day, the declaration of nominations. And then early voting began on May 9th. So you have what? 2 weeks of campaigning, and then early voting begins. Amazing. May 18th, that would be tomorrow, close of postal vote application. So I guess tomorrow's the deadline for mailing in your vote. Okay. And then Saturday is polling day, commencement of terms for territory senators. June 13th is the last day for receipt of declaration votes. I'm not sure what that means, but it's obviously maybe absentee ballots or something, I'm guessing. June 28th, return of writs, the last day. And then on July 1st, commencement of terms for state senators. So I guess that's the day the newly elected people take office. Their election runs a month. 5 weeks, if you want to be literal about it. That's the way to do it. Because the way we do it is completely wrong. My God, do we just blow it up here and blow it, frankly. Because that's insane. Insane. Now, I want to share with you just, I've run these from time to time. There's a group that calls themselves the Australian, with an E, Australien, government, and they do these good government ads. And actually, this is how I realized they had an election coming up this week, because I saw this ad. So just compare and contrast it to the kind of advertising, political advertising we have here. All right, you ready? All right, so here is this honest government ad.
Hello, I'm from the Australian government, where we've literally tried everything to win this election, apart from being not shit. Tim tried to stop you putting up signs in your front yard. Dave swapped preferences with this cooker. Alan went into hiding. Fiona went full Karen. Josh told you these are fake independents. But despite having the might of the entire country's corporate media stacked behind us, none of our bullshit, I mean miracles, seem to be working this time. Where are the miracles, Australia?
Where are the goddamn miracles?
Did we not stroke that culture war enough?
There's a boat full of Chinese trans athletes spying on public toilets off the coast of WA. And Albo gave them visas.
Fuck, it looks like you've finally cottoned on to all our bullshit, Australia. And so now it looks like we might lose this election. Of course, that's how it looked on the eve of the last election too. So if you'd like to help history repeat, we ask you to please relax, take your eye off the ball, and let yourself be lulled into a sense of security as we ramp up the Scott fuckery to unimaginable levels during this final crucial week. Starting off by telling you that we'll change if you re-elect us. Sure, our entire campaign was built on vote for us because you know who we are and you don't know the other bloke. But then we realised the problem is that you do know who we are. So now our slogan is vote for us because we'll be someone else. There's more Scotties you haven't seen.
We can be loose units too.
Are we desperate? Sure.
Are we all out of ideas?
Absolutely. But are there enough of you left who we might just convince to re-elect us? We fucking hope so. Australian government.
Yes. Australian government. Honesty in advertising, I guess. Except that the Juice Media produced that and do all these ads, and they've been doing it for a while now. And I guess, you know, they're not official. But just saying. The Scott fuckery, by the way, is Scott Morrison, who is the current prime minister, who I guess they're talking about re-electing or not. I'm sorry, I'm not very up on Australian politics. It's all I can do to stay on top of all the crap that's happening here. But, you know, I try. I do try. So I'm looking at their list of candidates, too. And they've got, I don't even know how to read this. So we'll see what happens. But they'll be in, you know, start the election process, do all the campaigning, and wrap it up all in a month's time. And we're still sitting here doing the circle jerk. Welcome to America, everybody. Hey, we had news yesterday. You know, Friday was Jen Psaki's last day as White House press secretary.
You know, this is my last briefing. And it is, Brian. And I wanted to start with a series of thank yous. I promised myself I wasn't going to get emotional. Okay. Thank you. I want to say thank you to the president and the first lady. They entrusted me in serving this role for the last 15 months.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this a little bit before, but during my first conversation with them, which was in November of 2020 after the election, I was very nervous when I went to see them in Delaware. And really what we talked about for the majority of our conversation was the importance of returning integrity, respect, and civility to the White House. The small sliver of my job here in engaging with all of you, that doesn't not mean that we haven't let our Irish side show, mine and the president's as well, from time to time. I recognize that. But on my best days, and as I look back, I hope I followed the example of integrity and grace that they have set for all of us and do set for all of us every day. And I'm incredibly grateful to them.
Now, I thought Jen Psaki did a really good job as press secretary. She wasn't sarcastic. She wasn't snide. She wasn't mean. She worked with the press. She even tolerated Doody. What's his name? The Ducey guy. You know, him. I thought she was really good. And, you know, who knows what will happen when she goes to MSNBC. I have no idea what show she'll be on. You know, they were building up Simone Sanders. Ugh, this woman, talk about failing upwards. Years ago, before, well, you know what? Forget it. We'll talk about Simone Sanders another day. All I will tell you is her new MSNBC weekend show flopped. Just flopped. Sort of like Meghan McCain's book, and they deserve each other. Okay, I said it. All right, so that was Jen Psaki saying goodbye on Friday. Yesterday, Karine Jean-Pierre made history at the podium.
I just want to say a few words about how honored I am to be here with all of you today in this role, in this room, standing behind this podium. I am obviously acutely aware that my presence at this podium represents a few firsts.
Yep.
I am a Black, gay, immigrant woman, the first of all three of those to hold this position.
She is.
I would not be here today if it were not for generations of barrier-breaking people before me. I stand on their shoulders. If it were not for generations of barrier-breaking people before me, I would not be here. But I benefit from their sacrifices. I have learned from their excellence, and I am forever grateful to them.
She was great. I mean, she is great. But I first learned of Karine Jean-Pierre when she was, I don't know what her title was at MoveOn.org, but she was always out in front. She was the spokesperson, although I think her title was higher than, you know, spokesperson. And she was articulate. She was smart. She was on point. She used to be on MSNBC all the time. And back in the day when I used to watch them more often, I would see her and I was always impressed with her. And then I find out, you know, she's so much more than the spokesperson for MoveOn.org. So I think she's going to be great in this job. She seemed a little nervous yesterday, but wouldn't you be? And she's married to Suzanne Malveaux of CNN. And I saw a picture of their family. They've got two little girls. And they were, I guess, on Karine's first day at the White House, that the four of them, it was a photo in front of the White House. That makes me feel good. You know, I think it's a difference in attitude from the former administration. So give her a chance. She's awesome. She's really, really good. A Black, gay, immigrant woman. First of all of those. First Black person to be a press secretary. First LGBT person to be a press secretary, first immigrant. She, I believe, was born in Haiti and grew up here. So new era at the White House, and this I think will be good. So that happened. Okay, one other thing to tell you about before Will Bunch gets here, and that is a bit of a sort of a cosmic coming together of things. The other day, I talked about George Carlin. Actually, last week I played a bit of his that has seemed to gone viral again, dealing with our abortion rights being taken away from us, our right to choose what women do with our bodies, right? And I said, my, how prescient he was. And we always talk about that part of George Carlin, how he seemed to be able, he had his finger on the pulse of culture and society and where we were going. So I find out last week that there's a new HBO documentary coming out. It's a two-parter. So it premieres Friday night and part two premieres Saturday night on HBO and HBO Max. And it's called George Carlin's American Dream. And I found out about it because Kelly Carlin, his daughter, who's a friend, tweeted out the trailer for it. And I watched it. I'm like, this is just what we need right now. I mean, we really could all use a shot of George Carlin right about now. So I contacted Kelly. I said, what's your involvement with this? She said, I'm an executive producer and I'm interviewed in there. And it's like, come on and let's talk about it. So we actually taped, excuse me, one day last week, because she's busy, and I'm going to play it back tomorrow in advance of Friday's premiere to get everyone in the mood and ready for George Carlin. So imagine my surprise when two things happened. First, Will Bunch, who will be along shortly, he puts out a newsletter every Tuesday. And if you don't get his newsletter, sign up for it. It's free. You should get it. It's great. And in today's newsletter, he talks about, you got it, George Carlin. In fact, of course, I don't have it here handy. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to play something for you and I'll find that piece of the newsletter and share it with you on the other side. The thing I'm going to play for you is the other thing that, you know, surprised me as I'm once again getting ready to for this George Carlin special, something I think we all need again at this point in time. And our friend of the show, Lauren Mayer, as she does every week, puts out a new song. And, well, you'll hear this one, this week's song, is inspired by none other than, come on, say it with me, George Carlin. Sometimes things just sort of happen the way they're supposed to, you know? All right, so take it away, Lauren Mayer. Whoops, and I just moved something. Ah, okay, here we go.
The latest fights over women's rights have us raging and snarling. No one said it better than the incredible George Carlin. When people claim to be pro-life, their falseness and deceit runs rife as any social safety net they scorn. Oh, they'll stir up quite a fuss while you're still in a uterus, but hell, you're on your own soon as you're born. Yeah, once you're born, you're on your own, despite their sanctimonious tone. For any actual assistance, there's no room. Oh, once you're born, you're on your own. GOP policies have shown their utter disregard for life outside the womb. They claim to value motherhood, but don't support moms like they should, which shows us what they think women are worth. They've revealed that they just need us as a breeder for a fetus, but you're on your own once you give birth. Once you give birth, you're on your own. You gotta manage all alone, with no help at all from heartless legislators pushing misogynist laws that would prove the truth of Margaret Atwood, enslaving us like baby incubators. This faux concern for life is full of rank hypocrisy, as each red state's getting more restrictions locked up. Since the domestic supply of infants is their sole priority, seems they need to keep us all barefoot and knocked up. They're also banning birth control, because the only point of sex is procreation, which means people who don't want kids, LGBTQ people, and postmenopausal women like me will be screwed. Or rather, not screwed.
Uh-oh.
If you're a tiny clump of cells, conservative compassion swells. They'll rave about you on each microphone. But when of real help there's a dearth, that's not pro-life, it's just pro-birth, which proves that once you're born, you're on your own. As all our basic rights get chucked, pre-born, you're fine, preschool, you're fine. Once you're born or you've given birth, you're on your own.
Lauren Mayer, everybody. Once you're born, you're on your own. Yes, and she did say at the beginning that that song was inspired by George Carlin. George Carlin everywhere I turn, right? So this morning, I'm preparing for the show, knowing that Will Bunch is going to be here. And as usual, every Tuesday, I get his newsletter. And today, the headline reads, Anti-Elite Style Sparked Fetterman's Surge. Fetterman being John Fetterman, the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania, who is running to be, well, for the Democratic nomination for Senate to replace Pat Toomey, who's retiring. That's what. So if John Fetterman wins his primary today, he'll go up against whichever Republican wins his primary, and it will likely be Oz or the other money guy that the rest of the Republicans are supporting, but not Trump. Got it? I know it's confusing. Will help us. But anyway, so I'm looking at Will Bunch's newsletter and I'm reading about John Fetterman, who just had a stroke, which, again, talk about throwing a wrench into the election proceedings. But here's his piece about John Fetterman, and it's an interesting insight that we'll get from Will when he joins us in a couple of minutes. But then the next section of the newsletter has a subtitle, Yo, Do This. And he writes, my voice is wobbling again. God damn it. You know, yesterday it didn't wobble, but today it's wobbling. I'm working with them on it. I just don't know what the solution is, obviously. All right, so he writes, yo, do this. The comedian George Carlin may have died in 2008, but 2022 is already shaping up as one of the biggest years of his career, he writes. Hold on, because Will just arrived in the Zoom room, so I am letting him in. All right, so he writes, but 2022 is already shaping up as one of the biggest years of his career. America's dangerous political right turn, which accelerated with the report that the Supreme Court looks poised to undo 49 years of abortion rights, has sparked a new following for Carlin's prescient anti-GOP diatribes that marked his final years. So what remarkable timing for the two-part Judd Apatow-led documentary, George Carlin's American Dream, which starts streaming on Friday night on HBO Max. And Will says, this nation could use a laugh or at least a good rant. Well, no kidding. And, you know, I guess great minds and all that stuff, because once again, as I told you earlier, the Carlin two-part documentary starts, it premieres Friday night, the part two premieres Saturday night. So you got the whole weekend planned. And Kelly Carlin, George's daughter, will be my guest on the program tomorrow to talk about the documentary and what to look forward to and, you know, all that cool stuff about George Carlin, because right around now, we really need George Carlin. So it was nice to see Will Bunch mention that was coming up in his newsletter. And there he is. Hey, Will Bunch, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Nicole, thanks for having me back.
Sure.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you're having Kelly on tomorrow. And I mean, timing is everything, but wow, you know, I mean, George Carlin's been like trending on Twitter every other day the last month, because you look at what he said about what was happening on the Republican, you know, and he criticized everybody. He had it in for Democrats often as well as Republicans, and often they deserved it. But you know, he was especially prescient about the right wing movement in this country. And, you know, I mean, I have to say, in honesty, you know, if you look at his routines from, like, I'd say the last 15 or 20 years, they weren't necessarily his funniest bits, because he was mad, you know.
Right.
It was, you know, I mean, he had this righteous anger, and that has incredible value. I mean, you know, I mean, comedians don't have to just be, you know, funny, you know, but which George Carlin was often hysterical, he was really mad because he saw what was happening in this country, and you know, he died in 2008, and everything that he saw happening and predicted or tried to warn us about has come to pass.
I know, right? And these videos surface. So last week, when we got the leak of the decision on Roe v. Wade, all of a sudden George Carlin starts trending again, and there's a bit of his that's gone viral yet again on abortion and our rights to control our bodies. And
right.
he called everything. He was such a great observer of the human condition.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
he really cut through the
BS on abortion and really just, you know, just laid out the, you know, patriarchal domination that it's really all about. You know, he got it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So this documentary, so I recorded with Kelly actually last week, just because her schedule,
and I
wanted to air it closer to the time of the airing of the documentary. So it's going to run tomorrow. But we talk a lot about how this came to be. She wanted to do something. And some years ago, I guess, got together with Judd Apatow. And boy, what a great person to do it, because I don't know if you saw his documentary on Gary Shandling. And that's what made Kelly say he's the guy, because she was a good friend of Gary Shandling.
It's perfect. The timing, the team, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So
we have that coming up tomorrow. So we'll watch.
And after today's Pennsylvania primary, we're going to need some humor.
Oh, my God.
Right? So.
Okay, so this is the reason I invited you here today. Yeah. As I said, you know, we've talked about national news all the time, but today it's right there where you live. You are a national columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, but in today's column is, well, a lot about the race there. Now, it is primary day, but there, and it's in four other states too, but the biggest, I think, yeah, the most consequential is Pennsylvania today, where you've got a few races of note. Now, let's talk about the Democratic race for the nomination for the Senate race, because there was news on that front yesterday or over the weekend. John Fetterman has a stroke? What?
Yeah, that news. I mean, we knew something was up because he left the campaign trail on Friday. It turns out because he had this stroke. It wasn't announced publicly until Sunday afternoon, I guess, so they had a better handle on what was going on. And yeah, that was a shocker, you know. But, you know, you have to put it into perspective. I mean, I think another reason why they waited a couple of days to put the news out is they wanted to make sure that they could say with confidence, which they did, that he suffered, you know, no long-term impairment.
Right.
From this. And there was more news today, actually, that he's going to be getting a pacemaker defibrillator.
Right. Right, to deal with the AFib, so, yeah, which is what they believe caused the stroke.
So it's unfortunate for him and his family, but it's all in the long run, it's a good news story because this was detected in time to save his life.
Absolutely.
And he, you know, with the wonders of modern medicine, which God knows have helped me a lot since I turned 50, so I know how that works.
Me too,
you know too, Nicole, we all know
that's right,
that modern medicine is keeping us here, and modern medicine is going to keep him here, and he's a crushing favorite to win the nomination tonight. I guess he'll probably do even a little bit better than he would have, because he'll probably get a few sympathy votes,
huh,
right?
Interesting. You know, but let's talk about John Fetterman. So, yeah, so basically this race is between him and Connor Lamb. Connor Lamb tried and failed for this before, didn't he?
Yeah. I love you, Nicole, but would you please not mention Malcolm Kenyatta, who is in terms of brilliance was the best candidate in this race.
And oh, really?
Got a lot of deals,
so. I don't even know. This is sad. I don't even know who that is.
That is sad. That's a major failure on the media. Malcolm Kenyatta, I mean, he's emerged. I mean, he did gain some of a national profile because during the whole 2020 mess leading up to January 6th, he was a strong spokesman for voting rights and attacking some of the anti-democratic things that were happening in Pennsylvania. He's a brilliant. I mean, he would be the first African-American senator and the first openly gay senator. He's 31 years old.
Wow.
I mean, I'm sure he's not going to win this race, but hopefully he'll end up in Congress or something. Anyway, I'm sorry. That was my little mini rant. I'm actually leaving when this interview is over. I'm finally going to be able to get to my neighborhood polling place, which I've been so busy today, I haven't been able to get out there.
Oh, wow.
And cast my vote for Malcolm in the race. Connor Lamb was the pick of a certain establishment type Democrat here,
right,
in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
I mean, believe it or not, here in Philadelphia and also in Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, you've still got these cigar chomping, you know, 20th century style board boss types running the party organizations. They have very close ties to trade unions with these kind of, you know, conservative old school, you know, they're very white trade unions where a lot of the rank and file, to be honest, has voted for Trump in the last couple elections, you know. And so you saw that kind of institutional weight thrown behind Lamb. And you know, I mean, 2 years ago, the fact that he seemed like a Joe Manchin type centrist was seen as a plus. And, you know, I mean, and now even Manchin has an endorsement. Manchin did have a fundraiser for him, though.
Oh, really? Of course,
yeah,
he did.
So, I mean, they are friends. And that association was made in voters' minds. And I think those are, you know, I think there's a real disconnect between the base of the Democratic Party here in Pennsylvania is a lot younger and a lot more progressive and a lot more multicultural and all of those things than the party leadership. And Fetterman was somebody who he really connected with a lot of the Democratic base in different ways. I mean, he, you know, he did a great job in introducing himself around the state and getting out to a lot of rural areas or kind of struggling, you know, Rust Belt industrial cities where people weren't used to seeing Democrats. And he really forged a connection with those folks.
Right.
I think for a lot of the core, you know, suburban, the kind of newish base of the Democrats, the suburban college educated type voter, the people who honestly put Biden over the top here in the state in 2020. I think even though Fetterman isn't necessarily their type of candidate normally, but I think there's this craving for somebody that they fantasize about as kind of a Trump whisperer, that there's a guy out there who looks like that.
Right.
Somebody who looks like that, who can go into Trump country and win back some voters. And the other thing is, I mean, his style is very assertive, you know, and bold. And God knows what's the critique of Democrats these days is, you
right.
know, timidity, cowardness, right?
Right.
Are you getting a cowardly vibe from this picture?
No, not at all. So yeah. I put up this picture specifically for those who can't visualize John Fetterman. He's always been sort of a fish out of water. He does not look like your typical Democrat, but I think now that works in his favor. And he doesn't act like your typical Democrat either. Now, you had some tough words for him in your newsletter today, Will Bunch. Sort of like not bad, just saying live up to the potential here. You can do it. You got to just grab the wobble of the horns.
There's a bit of a question where he's coming from policy, because he's been a little bit of a chameleon type on policy in that he introduced himself in 2016 as a Bernie Sanders style progressive. And I think the Today Show or some major network outlet interviewed him last week, and they asked him if he's a progressive, and he said, no, I'm a Democrat.
Oy.
And he's reinvented himself as generic Democrat. I'm Joe Biden's 51st vote. And God knows, you know, Joe Biden needs a 51st vote.
Yes.
God knows he'd be a massive improvement. Remember, the person who holds this seat right now is Pat Toomey.
Yes.
Right. So would you want John Fetterman or Pat Toomey? I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer, right? If there's a new politics of Democrats being able to connect with the real multicultural working class, you know, and not just that, you know, I mean, it's, I think if you get into that mindset of, oh, we need to win back the Trump middle class, then you're neglecting, you know, the Democrats need to, you know, first of all, stop the bleeding of losing Latino working class voters, right?
Right. And,
even a few, you know, even some African-American male voters, you know, drifted off the reservation, right, and so to speak, in 2020. I want to see people who can win those voters back, but it's not just the election. It's not just what they do in the election. If Fetterman wins, it's what he does when he gets to Washington.
Exactly.
We're going to have to.
And maybe he's just trying to be politically expedient or something, and trying to show I'm a good team player. Don't worry, I'm not going to be out there like the squad. He's just trying to show that he'll, you know, that he will not be a mansion or a cinema, that he will be a reliable Democratic vote, because he gives the impression of being sort of an outsider and someone who's going to shake things up. And I think he's trying to, you know, persuade the people who might think he's a loose cannon because he doesn't look the part. That he can play.
Yeah, I think he's tried to set up that break with Manchin style politics by saying that he would, for example, vote to end the filibuster.
Yes.
I mean, to a lot of, you know, I mean, I think he knows, like, I think he really just honed on the like five or six right things to either say or do to appeal to this year's restive, if that's the right word, Democratic base.
Sure.
Know? Democratic voters are very anxious. They want somebody who they feel is going to fight for them.
Yep.
And in terms of, you know, I mean, saying that you would end the filibuster sends a signal, I think, to Democratic voters that's more powerful than offering a really nuanced position on expanding health care or anything like that.
I agree. I agree. Will Bunch. Yeah. So then now the question. So it looks like John Fetterman's going to be the Democratic nominee. Then the question is, who does he run against? And on the right, that you have you what appears to be a three-way race right now between Mehmet Oz, who has Trump's endorsement, another guy, financier David McCormick, and this gets complicated. David McCormick, who's married to Trump's former aide Dina Powell, and supported by some of Trump's advisors like Hope Hicks. But Trump,
Stephen Miller, although I think Miller may have drifted away after Trump endorsed Oz. But yeah,
wow,
I know. Wow, yeah, wow, right,
right. And the thing is, why did Trump endorse Oz? Because he's on television, and Trump thinks that trumps everything else. If you're on TV, you have to be popular. That's how his mind works. And but now there's this other woman who's coming up out of left field, right? Because
Kathy Barnett, yes.
Now, she's nuts.
Some of it, a couple things are going on here. I mean, some of it's, you know, politics 101, which is, you know, so Oz and McCormick are both these multimillionaire, you know, nearly billionaire, but not quite, but they're multimillionaire carpetbaggers from out of state. When it appeared that they were neck and neck for the race, each one invested tens of millions of dollars. McCormick, for example, is supported by the whole crew over at Goldman Sachs. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with this hedge fund billionaire named Paul Singer.
We know who Paul Singer is. Vulture, Paul Singer. That's Greg Palast wrote a lot about Paul Singer. Yep.
Right. He's kind of become kind of notorious, and he has invested, I don't know, at least $7.5 million, maybe more than that, in McCormick's campaign. So anyway, McCormick's used that money to drive up Oz's negatives because in real life, Oz, you know, I'm not a big fan of him. And,
nor am I.
Way too quick to endorse, you know, quack medical things and that sort of thing. But in his past life, he was also kind of a saner, middle of the road person on stuff like he was okay with red flag laws on gun safety. He appeared to everybody to be pro-choice on abortion to some degree. He had a show on with a transgender kid who was transitioning and was nice to the kid. That's how out of step with today's Republican Party could you be, right? So it gave McCormick a lot of material to drive up Oz's negatives. Oz spent his money driving up McCormick's negatives, that he does business in China and he's a quote globalist unquote, which is, you know, I hate that term because it's got all these anti-Semitic overtones,
right.
but it's the word I heard, you know, when I talk to Republican voters and when I've read Republican voters' comments on this race, I mean, that's the term that comes up again and again. And here's Kathy Barnett, who out of nowhere, this B-list Fox News personality that no one's really ever heard of, who did run for Congress in 2020 in a very Democratic district in the affluent Montgomery County suburbs just outside of Philadelphia, lost by 20 points. Then went off and rented three buses for January 6th and did all that. But anyway, she's a good, you know, she's a little bit like Fetterman in that she doesn't talk down to voters. She relates to them. Her campaign slogan is "I am you," which is on one hand kind of a simple, dumb slogan, but on the other hand, on the other hand, what better captures the zeitgeist?
Right.
What voters seem to be craving in 2022 is somebody who will stick it to the man who's not, you know.
Right.
And it's interesting. You know, I went to, in my columnist guise, I went out to a kind of a big Republican dog and pony show with a lot of their candidates for Senate and governor. And Kathy Barnett and Oz were at this event. And I went there to catch up with Kathy Barnett and question her just about who the heck she is and where she's coming from. But just sitting through this event for a couple hours, I mean, you know, the Republican Party base, which you and I aren't particularly plugged into, but they seem to be very restive themselves. And they seem to be, honestly, I well, they certainly despise Joe Biden, but I also picked up just a lot of anger at Mitch McConnell, people like that. And so really, really in both parties, it's a good year to run as an anti-establishment type candidate.
Right.
And so, so Kathy Burnett, you know, these other two, it's funny, it reminds me so much of, I don't know if you're into horse racing, if you watched that Kentucky Derby this year.
No, but
everybody saw the videos, right?
Right.
And all these horses that people have bet all the money on were battling it out in the stretch. Nobody was looking. And this horse that was the longest possible shot, Rich Strike, in the back of the pack, just raced out of nowhere and passed everybody.
Came just
and this looks like the political equivalent. I mean, I don't know. I mean, to my mind, it's really 50-50 how it's going to turn out because, Oz seems to be clinging to a small lead and he's got Trump support and he's got Sean Hannity on Fox News fighting for him every night and trying to tear down Kathy Barnett. And that might be just enough to push Oz over the top. But the polls I've seen, you know, seem to show that, that there's still a lot of undecided voters on the Republican side and that they seem to be breaking more for Barnett than for Oz.
Wow. So
that's where you want to be at this time of the race. Right.
Right. So this could be a big upset because on two ways. One, it goes against Trump. So that makes a statement on its own. And then it's this out of left field or right field woman who just came from nowhere and is as radical as they get. She was, there's video of her marching with the Proud Boys on January 6th. So that's who she is.
She's got a history of, just ugly comments about homosexuality in the past and about Islam. Because she was a loose cannon. She wanted attention. She wanted to get those Fox News hits and she'd say anything.
And she got
it. So there've been all these ripple effects. Trump then turned around and endorsed the most extreme candidate for governor.
Yeah.
That was Doug Mastriano, who's a Christian nationalist, huge promoter of the big lie. January 6th bus renter and attendee. He did that because Mastriano is breaking it out of the pack. He's kind of like Fetterman. He's not 100% locked, but it looks pretty likely.
Wow.
Is going to win. And so Trump wanted to endorse at least one winner in Pennsylvania if his other candidate Oz.
So that's why he did that. Okay. There's only one Democrat running unopposed, right? So that's
Josh Shapiro. He's the attorney general. He's very popular. He's kind of a generic Democrat too, much as Fetterman is running, but he actually, as attorney general, he was on the ballot with Hillary Clinton in 2016 and with Biden in 2020. And each of those times he actually got more votes than Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. So, I mean, if you want to win, he's the guy you probably want up there against Mastriano. He did this and I wrote a column criticizing him for this, but Shapiro actually did the thing where he ran an ad that was kind of criticizing Mastriano, but really kind of talking in dog whistles to Trump voters to boost Mastriano up because he thinks he's trying to pick his opponent and he thinks Mastriano is the most beatable one. My take on that is, I mean, I lived through 2016 and I saw what happened with Trump and
take nothing for granted.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, Team Hillary was so excited to be running against Trump.
I know.
And they didn't,
They got cocky. No, exactly. Exactly. So, before we run out of time, I want to ask about one congressional race that's happening in Pennsylvania. Obviously, all of House representatives are up, but you've got an interesting race happening in the 12th district. What area is that? It's Summer Lee, who's the progressive.
That is the other side of the state, although my son, Jesse, God bless him, is a 27-year-old cub reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. In fact, he was out with Summer Lee this morning. So it's really cool. I'm proud of him. And Summer Lee is in Pittsburgh. It's interesting. It's basically with, gerrymandering or whatever you want to call it. It's kind of the safe Democratic seat in the Pittsburgh area, you know, the areas of Allegheny County, of the city of Pittsburgh, and the adjacent suburbs that vote most Democratic are kind of lumped in this district. So winning the primary today is pretty much tantamount to getting elected in November. So,
right.
And Summer Lee is, she is a squad caliber.
She had Bernie come out and campaign for her, right?
She would get her certification and become a member of the squad if she's elected. Very progressive, unapologetic about
it. Good. That's what we need. Yeah. We need more of that.
I think she'd be fantastic if she's elected. The guy that she's running against has the unfortunate name Steve Irwin, not the deceased animal.
I'm sorry, what's his name?
Steve Irwin.
Steve Irwin, the Aussie guy.
Beloved Steve Irwin. The Steve Irwin is not beloved. He's a very conservative Democrat. Worked for a law firm that did union busting type stuff. And even though he's endorsed by all these unions, which is just the craziness of Pennsylvania politics, you know, and the real disturbing wrinkle in this race is that, you know, because of Summer Lee's likely joining of the squad if she gets elected, you've seen AIPAC, the pro-Israel PAC,
spend
an ungodly amount of, like, more than $2 million, I think.
Wow.
Just an insane amount of money.
That's a trend in this primary season, where in Oregon, some crypto billionaire has thrown like millions of dollars into a primary race for a congressional seat in Oregon. Yeah. So has spent like $2 million, which is unheard of before.
We have here in Pennsylvania, we have a right-wing libertarian billionaire named Jeff Yass, Yass. I don't know if your listeners have ever heard of him, but he's invested $18 million in races in Pennsylvania, many of them state legislative races, because we've had a lot of success, especially in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, in electing Democratic socialists and people who are pretty far left, are gaining a small foothold in our state legislature. And billionaire Jeff Yass is working with groups trying to stop that. He is obsessed with these people want to destroy public education. I mean, we call them probe charter schools, but really what they want to do is unmake public education, the great tradition of public education in this country.
Yep.
So you have these groups spending. It's just a very crazy election. Before I go, I just can't state this enough. The way things are breaking in the Pennsylvania Republican races in particular, we could wake up tomorrow and the three top Republican candidates in Pennsylvania, which I can't say this enough, this is the state where it all started, right? Declaration of Independence,
right,
Constitution,
right.
Independence Hall. Here in Pennsylvania, we could have three candidates, the top three candidates on the Republican ballot could all be people who were part of January 6th.
It's just terrifying.
I mean, when you watched that horrible day unfold,
yeah,
did you think, boy, well, here's the next leadership class of
it's frightening. So,
yeah, I mean, we thought these people should be in jail, and thank God some of them are, but these people have risen to, you know, and it's hard, you know, we live in such bubbles. I mean, who are these people?
Yeah,
you
know, I know.
Who are rallying behind these QAnon? I mean, the
crazies, the worst of the worst. Yeah. I get. Hey, Will, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're gonna run out of time, and I want to mention the book you have coming up.
Yes,
so a new book coming out after, and this one I gotta read, because after the Ivory Tower falls, how college broke the American dream and blew up our politics, and how to fix it. You know, my kid didn't go to college. My daughter, who's now 23 and is out working, opted to skip college because she wasn't a good student, didn't like school, and thought it was crazy, as did I, for her to go into debt when there wasn't something specific she knew she wanted to study. And I think she's better off for it because she's got friends who are graduating with huge debt and can't get a job. So,
yeah, I mean, I think more and more people are waking up to how much this whole system has gone off the rails, right? And, you know, and we didn't know, I mean, in our generation, or even the folks who came, you know, for the next generation after me, it was just a given that, you know, you had to go to college.
Of course. But it was cheap when we were kids.
Yeah, right. And what happened is it was, you know, it's been kind of a frog in boiling water situation, right? Where it went, you know, people like us, the baby boomers, the parents, right? And, you know, we, like you said, we remember when it was cheap. We said, all right, our children, you know, you're going to follow in our footsteps. Yep. Meanwhile, the whole game changed because, you know, first of all, you know, I mean, public universities used to be the backbone of this system. And, you know, our state governments, as they got more conservative, cut them off, you know, and told these kids that they're on their own.
Yep.
It's like, you know, you need a college degree more than ever to succeed in this society, but we're going to put all the responsibility on you. And it's okay because, you know, it's just, well, you just borrow the money because, you know,
Everyone else does it, right? Either you can
borrow the money and spend your whole life paying it back and work, or you cannot go to college and be shut out. And,
exactly.
You know, I mean, and there's so many ramifications. One ramification that we don't talk about enough is the whole deaths of despair culture, where studies have shown that people who don't have college degrees are the bulk of this incredible increase we've seen in drug overdose deaths,
uh-huh.
and suicide in particular, because these people have been told that this is a meritocracy and you didn't go to college, so you don't have merit. And,
right.
And it's been devastating. So what I try and do in the book is I try and do a couple things. One is I just try to tell the whole history of how we got here. And I think a lot of listeners will really appreciate the connection between what we witnessed with growing up with the kind of campus protest movement of the 1960s and how the squelching of that protest movement was really the inspiration to start raising tuition and start making college.
Yeah. Well, the book is out. It's out in August. We will definitely talk about it then.
Yeah.
So, Will Bunch, I know you got to go vote. So I want to get you out to go vote.
Malcolm Kenyatta, so,
that's more important than this. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know it's a crazy busy day there. All eyes
it's
are
wild,
on Pennsylvania.
It's wild, but it's fun. It's exciting. So
it
thanks for having
definitely
me.
Definitely is. Well, thank you for joining us. And it's always great to see you. Thank you so much. Will Bunch, subscribe to his newsletter if you don't already. Or if you did, you would have read about the George Carlin thing. Among other things. So thank you, Will.
Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. And there you go. That's Will Bunch. And find him on the Twitters at Will_Bunch. And with that, we're done. So don't forget, tomorrow, Kelly Carlin will be here. We're going to talk George. You know, Kelly's been on the show so many times, and we've talked about him, but, you know, she is a brilliant woman in her own right, and although we have done shows where we talked about him, most of it has been about her and the work she's doing. This is about him, the genius that was George Carlin. So we'll celebrate him tomorrow. And hopefully we'll have some election news to celebrate. In addition to Pennsylvania, there is Oregon, where there are a couple of races. Let's defeat Kurt Schrader, please. This is what primaries are for, to get rid of the conservadems who don't deserve to be part of the Democratic Party. Get in progressives who will help push our agenda, not sabotage it. Kentucky, Charles Booker, you go. North Carolina, let's say goodbye to Madison Cawthorn, shall we? All right, we got a lot to talk about tomorrow. So that's it. I'll leave you with the news, and thank you, as always, for listening. All right. If you're in one of those five states and you haven't done so yet, vote like your life depends on it. Because it does. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I know you hear this every time an election day comes around, but the stakes have never been higher. Please vote. Five states have primary elections today: Idaho, Kentucky, North Carolina, Oregon, and Pennsylvania. And that group includes some of the more important races in the cycle, which should give us a few hints about the bigger picture when it comes to Trump's grip on the Republican Party, progressive challenges to Democratic centrists, and the rise of anti-democratic and extreme candidates. The biggest prizes of the day seem to be in Pennsylvania. Both the Senate seat and the governor's mansion are up for grabs. The party's nominees for a Senate seat and the governor's mansion are up for grabs, along with every House seat. The Republican Senate primary in Pennsylvania pits the former guy, Trump, against the Club for Growth. Trump's first pick, Sean Parnell, quit the race after his former wife accused him of choking her. So Trump then backed Dr. Oz over the other candidate, financier David McCormick, who happens to be married to a former Trump aide, Dina Powell, and enjoys the support of some well-known Trump advisors, including Hope Hicks. But with the fierce competition between Oz and McCormick, it seems another lane might have opened. And far-right candidate Kathy Barnett is enjoying an 11th-hour surge. And she's really bad. Footage newly released shows Barnett marching with the Proud Boys on January 6th. Yeah. Now, in the Pennsylvania Democratic Senate primary, progressive Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has been leading in the polls over the centrist Connor Lamb. But Fetterman had a minor stroke last week. Well, he's still hospitalized and will not be at the election watch party tonight. So there's a wild card for you. And in the gubernatorial primary, Republicans are again split. Trump endorsed the hard right candidate Mastriano, and the winner of the Republican primary will face off against the Democrat Josh Shapiro, who's running unopposed. And there's a lot of interest in Pennsylvania's 12th congressional district, where progressive state representative Summer Lee, backed by national progressives, including Bernie Sanders, who came to campaign with her, she's running against Steve Irwin. He's the moderate candidate who's endorsed by the retiring Congressman Mike Doyle. Irwin is also being backed by pro-Israel groups like Democratic Majority for Israel and AIPAC. That's one to watch. In addition to Pennsylvania, there are races in other states like North Carolina, where the Trump-endorsed Ted Budd is leading former Governor Pat McCrory in the polls to succeed the retiring Senator Richard Burr. Madison Cawthorn is from North Carolina. He's seeking to avoid a runoff against State Senator Chuck Edwards, who's backed by a number of North Carolina Republican officials, including Senator Tom Tillis. In Oregon, Conservadem Congressman Kurt Schrader, who is a seven-term incumbent, faces a progressive challenger who should be able to show him the door finally. That's Jamie McLeod Skinner. And in Idaho, Trump endorsed the lieutenant governor, Janice McGeachin. She's primarying the Republican governor, Brad Little. McGeachin is possibly the most extreme candidate Trump has endorsed this year. She wants to ban abortion in cases of rape, incest, and the health of the mother, and said on Facebook that the governor's refusal to do so means he's with, quote, the radical leftists and Satanists. Well, okay. She also posed with militia members outside her government office in 2019 and made pre-taped remarks at a white nationalist event in Florida in February. In non-election news, America is in mourning yet again, this time for the 10 victims of the latest in our unending gun violence epidemic in Buffalo, New York. President Biden heads to Buffalo to comfort the families of the victims, people who were targeted by the 18-year-old shooter because they're Black. In his remarks, Biden will call this despicable act for what it is, terrorism motivated by a hateful and perverse ideology that tears at the soul of our nation. And he'll call on all Americans to reject the lies of racial animus that radicalize, divide us, and led to the act of racist violence. Now, House Democratic leaders have doubled their efforts to pass the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act. This new bipartisan legislation would create offices inside the Justice Department, Department of Homeland Security, and the FBI to monitor, investigate, and prosecute cases of domestic terrorism, with a focus on white supremacist-related incidents. A similar bill passed the House by voice vote during the 116th Congress, but later stalled in the Senate. Let's see if the 117th Congress can do something with it. By the way, more information on another of the shootings that happened over this weekend. The suspected gunman who opened fire in a California church on Sunday, killing one person and injuring five others, is a Chinese-American man believed to have targeted Taiwanese congregants in a, quote, politically motivated hate incident. Speaking of the shooting in Buffalo, social media posts by the 18-year-old punk gunman reveal that he had been planning this attack for months. The gunman shared on the chat app Discord and the hate-filled online forum 4chan that he selected this specific zip code in Buffalo because it had the highest percentage of a black population close enough to where he lived. Police and other officials have described the mass shooting as a hate crime. Among the 10 people killed were a retired police lieutenant, a substitute teacher, a grandmother of six, and a dedicated community activist. And finally, you may recall back in early 2001, the Pentagon declassified a bunch of UFO-related news files, including a video of U.S. Navy fighters encountering an unidentified flying object. In December, an amendment was added to the annual National Defense Authorization Act, requiring the military to establish a UFO research office and conduct meaningful investigations on such sightings. Well, Congress hasn't held a public hearing on UFOs since the Air Force closed a public investigation called Project Blue Book in 1969 until today. Yep, members of a House subcommittee will hear testimony from defense officials on reports of unidentified aerial phenomena and their potential risks to national security. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.